Hi, everybody. So this is it. This is the daily show that you've come to know that's very different because we hold no punches. So look for it. Truth bomb number one. For the first time ever, a U.S. president is being tried on criminal charges. It has begun. Truth bomb number two. Is Mr. Trump corrupt? A serious criminal charge? Or just a businessman protecting his brand? A misdemeanor? We'll explain both. Truth bomb number three. Can Mr. Trump end up in jail? What are the odds? We're going to tell you. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. All right, so this is the day to do this story because it's on. The somewhat seedy corruption case against Donald Trump is on, and the opening arguments have been delivered. According to the prosecutor representing the state of New York, bringing charges against Mr. Trump, he is a man who schemed to, quote, corrupt the 2016 election by silencing people who would have hurt his chances of winning. According to, by the way, the state of New York, what Mr. Trump did was, quoting again, election fraud, pure and simple. Those are the words that were uttered by the opening arguments or during the opening arguments by the prosecutors. Those are the words. Mr. Trump's lawyers, though, had different words. They tell a very different story. They say, this isn't fraud. And what the former president did had nothing to do with the election. Defense attorney Todd Blanche seems to admit that Mr. Trump did pay off the controversial porn star, but he says it wasn't fraud. He says it wasn't fraud and it had nothing to do with the election. He says it was simply done to, quoting here, protect his family, his reputation, and his brand. And it was not a crime. So, okay, here's what we should do. Since the thing is just starting, I kind of want to give you a setup, right? This is non-political. Here's what's going to happen in the trial, right? So let's go through some of the players. These are the players who you will hear about, but you're not going to see them, at least not testifying, because the case is not going to be televised. And there will be no cameras in the courtroom. Front and center, the former president, who becomes the first ever to face a criminal trial in the country's history. All right, baseball card number two, Stormy Daniels. Yes, she really is a pornographic movie star whose real name is Stephanie Clifford and did apparently have an encounter with Mr. Trump. Michael Cohen. He was Mr. Trump's lawyer who actually paid hush money to Ms. Daniels and was then repaid by Mr. Trump. Cohen served jail time for the incident and now will testify against Trump, who he says should also go to jail just like he did. Karen McDougal. She is a former Playboy model who is said to also have had an affair with Mr. Trump and then agreed to sell her story for $150,000 about it. However, a magazine who bought it buried it instead. The story, that is, not her. David Pecker. Interesting name, huh? He is the publisher of the magazine who paid McDougal. Prosecutors argue he was Mr. Trump's associate and would often do this to silence his critics. Do what? Well, it's called catch and kill. Pay for the exclusive rights to a story and then kill it instead of doing it. Pecker is also a witness in the case. So there you have it. Those are some of the big players that we know of right now. Others possibly could be introduced. Aside from prosecutors and defense attorneys, those are the people who are going to be really making up this drama, right? But what about the drama itself? What, for example, does the state of New York have to prove, right, about Donald Trump? That's a very good question. They need to prove that what Mr. Trump did wasn't just a payoff. That's not enough by itself to show that he committed a felony. They have to go beyond that. They also can't just say that Mr. Trump lied when he had Mr. Cohen pay Daniels on his behalf, because that just by itself would only be a misdemeanor, not a felony. So not really that big of a deal. So what does the state have to prove to convict Mr. Trump of a more serious crime, a felony? They have to prove that he did all of this as part of another underlying crime. So the payoff itself is not enough. He had to have done it for another reason, a more serious crime, an underlying crime. That's the term that's used, underlying. Now, they must prove, for example, that the money was spent to improve his chances of winning the election. If they can do that, they can say the only reason you paid this off is because you didn't want voters to know about what you did, right? Then they could say that it wasn't just a payment to avoid embarrassment, or so his wife didn't find out what he had done with the affair and all that stuff, but that he was instead influencing the election with an illegal campaign finance payment. That's their argument that they say they're going to be able to prove. If that becomes the underlying crime, that he was actually making a campaign finance payment, then the case becomes a felony. So that's what they have to do, not just show that he did it, but why he did it. So what about Mr. Trump's lawyers? What do they need to do? What do they have to show in this case? Another good question. His lawyers need to portray the Daniels payoff as a private matter, and the charges against him as nothing more than a technical bookkeeping violation. Oh, I was supposed to put it in the ledger as I paid here, but it actually went down as I paid over there. People make mistakes when it comes to bookkeeping all the time. That's what they're going to argue. By the way, that would not be substantial enough to warrant a criminal charge against the former president. And they also need to try and show that prosecutors are overreaching. They need to tell the jury, these guys are, come on, this isn't that big a deal, and they're trying to make the case bigger than it is. That's kind of like their job. That's what you're going to be hearing. And that linking this case, right? They're going to say, you're trying to link this case to federal election laws. Those two things have nothing to do with each other. They're going to say that that's kind of a weird approach that would test the interaction of laws at the state and at the federal levels. Because remember, campaign finance is a federal matter. It's not a state matter. He's being charged in a state court. Did you follow that? Here's another question. This is important. The question is probably the one that is most asked. Can Mr. Trump actually go to jail if he's found guilty? Is he going to be going to jail? Actually, the chances of that happening are slim. Even if Mr. Trump is convicted, he's unlikely to face any prison time. Why? Because even at the felony level, falsifying business records carries a sentence of up to 4 years in prison. But first-time offenders, particularly in nonviolent cases, what they often get is probation. And finally, if Mr. Trump is found guilty, can he still run for president? Yes, absolutely. There is nothing in the Constitution that prohibits him from doing so. However, there is a but here, kind of a big but. There are some states that might then argue that they have the right to take him off the ballot based on what their state constitutions say about a convicted felon running for office. That's where this thing could possibly get confusing. So here we go. Let's discuss it further, because there's still, I know, a lot of questions and a lot going on. And there's Dan Lazar. He's a writer, he's a journalist, and an expert on the U.S. Constitution, and he's good enough to join us right now. Maybe we start with that last part, the part where Trump's attorneys are going to say to the jury, look, yeah, he may have done something which could have been a crime because he somehow made a payoff and he had his attorney do it and he didn't do it, but then he paid his attorney. So that was deceptive. However, you can't put that together with any campaign finance laws because that's a bridge too far. Is that an important point that you think they're going to stress?
Oh yeah, totally important. I mean, I think the case is a real stretch. I mean, tying what is at best a kind of an accounting fudge and a misdemeanor at that, tying it to a violation of federal election law strikes me as just about the biggest stretch as I can imagine, and especially because federal prosecutors themselves examined the case and decided to pass on it. There wasn't enough there. But Al Bragg ran for DA on a Get Trump platform. So this campaign promise fulfilled. He's got to come up with something. This is the best he can do, and therefore he's going for it.
But let me quibble with you there on that a little bit. I hear Republicans make that argument all the time. Oh, they're just bringing this case because it's Trump. Where were those people every time a 17-year-old black kid in the hood gets his life ruined by smoking a marijuana cigarette? Where were they every time we see injustice put upon some American who doesn't have enough money to pay for lawyers? I mean, all of a sudden, we just discovered that the judicial system in this country oftentimes is not blind, and we're only going to bring it up in this case?
Well, oh, yeah, totally. I completely agree. I mean, anybody who's ever sat through a trial in the Manhattan courtroom, knows that this is a highly uncertain business and a lot of stuff goes wrong.
Yeah.
And a lot of ordinary people wind up getting screwed royally.
And who they prosecute.
People
and
who
should
not go to jail.
And who they prosecute, to your point, is subjective. It's subjective across the board, not just in this case.
Not only subjective, it's also regressive, because the 17-year-old kid smoking a joint, only goes to jail if he's black and poor. Believe me, if he's a prep school student with a lawyer dad and a mom sobbing hysterically at his side, he does not go to jail. He never goes to jail. Maybe he goes to, to the court mandated, some kind of therapy program, but that's it. I mean, he'll still be able to apply to, for admission to Yale the following year. This is completely regressed, completely fouled up. There are so many abuses that go on. But the fact that there are abuses doesn't mean that it's okay to abuse, Donald Trump in this instance. I mean, I don't like Donald Trump, but certainly this whole case is completely bonkers.
What do you make, Dan, of, I think, one of the most fascinating parts of this? And of course, this matters to me because I'm a journalist, and I never heard about this until it became public as I started reading about this case. This whole catch and kill thing, where some people have so much money, to be able to pay $100,000, $150,000, $200,000 every time somebody has something on you. And you have a guy who is a publisher for a magazine, and I tell him, hey, go give this guy money, own the story, but don't do the story, thereby we kill the story. That whole thing is really fascinating. What do you think of it? Had you heard of it before, and what impact might it have on the jury?
I actually had not heard of it before, but I've heard a lot about the National Enquirer. This is the magazine that about housewives in New Hampshire having sex with space aliens. This has been their moneymaker. So I'm not surprised they go this far. But look, to be fair, I mean, Trump is a guy who's running for president. He's got a checkered past. He's a big businessman. He's glamorous. He's been on Page Six. Countless times. Page Six of the New York Post, countless times. So from Trump's point of view, a lot of people are going to start coming out of the woodwork with stories to tell, and they want to be, they want to be paid off. Whether it's the building inspector who claims that Trump slipped him a bribe, or the Playboy centerfold who claims that she slept with Trump, etc. Everybody has got a reason. Everybody's got a motive to hit him up for money. So therefore, it seems that his organization, ran an operation in which they tried to stop these people before they can make trouble going into the final weeks of the campaign. I mean, Trump had enough problems with that famous, Access Hollywood tape, which, tied him up for weeks. So the last thing he needed was in late October to have Stormy Daniels come forth with some kind of salacious sex tale. Catch and kill makes a certain amount of sense in that context.
But again, let me push back on you. Why pay if you didn't do it? If you didn't do it, if you didn't sleep with a porn star or a Playboy bunny, and if you didn't have your best friend give her $150,000 to unethically claim to do the story and then kill it, if you had nothing to do with any of that stuff, why don't you just say, I had nothing to do with any of that stuff? I don't know what you people are even talking about, and walk away and not pay.
Yeah, that's really the admirable thing to do. You're quite right. But the fact is, what is the old line? A lie is around the block before truth even puts its boots on.
Yeah.
I mean,
Mark Twain.
An allegation like that could tie stuff up for weeks. The press would want to talk about nothing else. The Trump campaign would have been halted in its tracks as the press focused on the Stormy Daniels angle, and it would have really hurt him, or conceivably might have hurt him.
Let's talk.
And so therefore his organization wanted to stop it.
I'm going to take a break, and when I come back, I want to ask you about this whole underlying crime thing, because this seems to be right at the crux of this whole matter that the prosecution has to be able to prove. How important is it? Where's it come from in the Constitution? And how likely is it that it will be the difference maker in this case? We're going to talk about that with Dan Lazar. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
Take a fresh look around at life. Kaleidoscopic, isn't it? A shattered reality distorted by power. Tired vision with no real opinions. Pictures designed to simplify or confuse. Who really wants a better world? And is it just for the chosen few? Fractured images presented as fact. Can you see through their illusions? Going underground can.
The massive aid bill for Ukraine passed by the U.S. Congress ensures the conflict will continue. Countless lives will continue to be lost. But will this aid alter the events being played out on the ground? There is no reason to believe so.
Меня узнают как героя. Здравствуйте, здравствуйте, здравствуйте. Я очень рад. Эй, парень, да, хочешь быть таким же, как я? Ничего страшного. Просто делай добро и бросай его в воду.
Вступайте в ряды ангелов и... Это действительно сможет изменить мир.
Прозвали нас батальон ангелов, потому что мы были в камуфляжной форме, и они думали, что мы какой-то батальон. Наша эта группа составляла от 10 до 15 человек.
В данный момент вы выдаете гуманитарную помощь.
Ой, спасибо вам. Спасибо, огромное спасибо за то, что вот кто-то за нас беспокоится.
Мы попали в полуокружение, я тогда первый раз держал в руках пулемет.
Украинская армия пошла. Ну, я думаю, что не армия, скорее всего, а карательные батальоны пошли в наступление.
На мой взгляд, поменялась принципиальная позиция украинцев по отношению к жителям Донбасса, потому что они как бы перестали чувствовать какое-то вот человеческое сочувствие, наверное, к ним, потому что они их считают врагами, то есть все население.
Плакать хочется. Как мы тут жили. Спасибо вам, дорогие мои.
Давайте вас обнимем.
Спасибо вам.
I'm Rick Sanchez, and this is Direct Impact, and I'm talking to Dan Lazar about the Donald Trump case. We're talking about the Donald Trump case because it's finally begun. We've heard so much about an actual criminal case, and there's been so many political opinions one way or another on this case. And I think what we're trying to get to here is, what are the facts? How strong is the case or how weak is the case? And what we know right now is that what the prosecution has to do to try and find Donald Trump guilty is a bit of a novel argument that they have to create. They have to not only prove that he did this, which, by the way, it seems like the defense is stipulating he did it. You know, they're not going to go in there and say, no, he never had a relationship with Stormy Daniels or this other woman, McDougal. What they're saying is, what the hell does that have to do with him being charged with a felony in this case? Because, you know, he didn't want his wife to find out, or he was embarrassed, or he wanted to protect his brand. What they have to prove, the prosecutors, as we've discussed, is that it was more than that. What he was actually trying to do was trying to make sure the American people didn't find out about these things. And by trying to make sure the American people didn't find out about this, he was interfering in the campaign. And because he paid over $100,000 in both cases, they're going to say, well, those weren't really payoffs. They were campaign finance payments. And that's what they have to be able to show. It's a bit of a sticky wicket, as Dan has been telling us, but it's a really important part of this case. Dan, I'm wondering, were you surprised when you first started reading about this case and you read that that's the avenue that they were going to take? And what did you think of it when you first heard about it, and what do you think of it now?
I was very surprised. I mean, I thought it was a real stretch then. I think the same thing now. And, you know, by the way, let me just correct you on one point.
Of course,
Trump
of course.
Has not admitted to having a sexual relationship with Stormy Daniels. Everyone assumes he did, but he actually has not admitted to that.
Let me just add something to that. During opening arguments that I read carefully last night, there was no indication by his attorneys that they were going to argue that point. And you're right. That doesn't mean they're saying he did. They're just also not saying he didn't, for what it matters.
Right. So from his point of view, some woman comes out with a story that is believable, although he insists it's not true. And therefore, in order to make sure everything goes smoothly in the final weeks of the campaign, he pays her some money and tells her to be quiet and go away. And if you're as rich as Donald Trump is, you can pass out, some big bills pretty freely. So that's what he maintains he did. So he said he wasn't trying to cover up. He wasn't trying to lie. He was simply trying to prevent somebody from going public with a salacious but false story.
But he's a politician. So who cares what he says, Dan? Come on. This is a court of law. It's not about what some politician said on the stump. Of course, anything a politician says on the stump, I'm not going to believe. I don't care if it's Joe Biden or I'm not going to say Mother Teresa, but no matter who they are, what matters is what are their lawyers going to say when they get into the courtroom? That's what matters, no?
Yeah, sure, it's what matters, yeah. And the question is, the question is of overreach. The question is of a desperate prosecutor, a desperate DA, trying to advance his political career by nailing Donald Trump, who was about as popular in Manhattan as Typhoid Mary, and sent him to prison, and thereby earn his stripes. So that's clearly what's going on here. This is not how the system should be used.
Do you think that he is capable, or the system is capable, of delivering him a fair trial in a place like New York, where, as you say, he is very much loathed?
I've sat on juries. I've been unlucky enough to be chosen for a jury, and I was once actually locked away in a hotel for 3 days while we deliberated in some case. And juries, it's a very intense experience. And jurors, they do their best. They try to figure stuff out. They go over fine points of the law. They scratch their heads and argue with one another. And so, yeah, I think a jury is capable of deliberating in a fair way. In this case, I think that that Merchan, the judge, is capable of ruling in a honest and fair way. I'm suspicious of the gag orders. I think that that Merchan's political ties are sort of very strange in this case. Mm-hmm. But I think this whole case is really strange. So I don't blame Trump for wanting to point all these things out.
Do you think in this case that the jury will be able to come up with something where... Let me rephrase this question. What do the defense attorneys have to be able to make them understand so that they come back with a not guilty verdict? What is the most important thing you think they need to do? Trump's attorneys.
I think the question of the stretch.
It is.
I mean, I think the idea that, you know, that he's he paid this money in order to and that this payment amounted to a violation of federal election law. That is the big question. That's the big hurdle that the prosecution has got to overcome. And that is, you know, that is the barrier behind which the defense attorneys will hide as they take pot shots at the DA's staff.
By the way, I do have a bit of a concern in that I have been watching many of Trump's attorneys in the past in these cases, and they have not held up well. Not all of them, but there's been a few that I've made that I've wondered why he hired them. Do you know anything about these guys that he's using this time? Are they credible?
Not really. No, I don't.
Yeah, me neither. I get worried.
I have no idea.
Yeah. But, you know where I'm coming from, though. I mean, you know,
I mean, I think the question is whether Trump's defense can really respond adequately, quickly, and expertly enough to this case. But I think that they really have they have good material to work with. And remember, all you have to do is just plant a reasonable doubt
exactly.
in one of 12 jurors. And if you do that, then you've won your case.
And to your point, look, my God, your jurors, they're overreaching this poor man. Yeah, he did something wrong, but come on. This is too much, and they're doing it because he was the president, and et cetera, et cetera. Dan, great conversation. Enjoyed it, as usual. And let's see how this thing goes. I mean, I think we've kind of set the table for people. Now we just kind of let the process do course, as they say. Thank you, my friend, for joining us.
Yeah, but
always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to talk to Dan. Before we go, I want to remind you of our mission here. Simple, really. De-silo the world. Stop living in little boxes where we think it's only our box that matters. Truths don't live in boxes. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. That's how we see it. And I'll be looking for you again here on Direct Impact.